You know, one of the things that all of us as parents have dealt with as our children grow up is their questions. Well, Daddy, why? Well, why? And it seemed especially with Brian and Matt as they were growing up that if I told them do this, or if I told them not to do something, son, I don't want you to do that. Why, Daddy? And you'd give them a reason. But why, Daddy? But why, Daddy? And so finally, being the wise father that I was, I resorted to the tried and true, well-proven silencer. Because I'm your daddy and I said so. That's all the reason you need. Has anybody else in here ever used that argument with their children? Yeah, I thought so. Well, you know, children aren't the only one that ask a lot of questions. During his life on this earth, Jesus asked a lot of questions also. But not only did Jesus ask a lot of questions, Jesus provided the answer to many questions. But of all the questions that Jesus ever asked, there is none more important than the one he asked in Matthew chapter 16. It was at that retreat he had taken his disciples on near the coast of Caesarea Philippi. And he asked them that day, he said, "Who do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" Well, that same question was asked again on a slightly different way and slightly different words on another occasion. And this time when Jesus asked the question in a slightly different way, he wasn't speaking to his disciples, he was speaking to a group of Pharisees. And he asked those Pharisees in Matthew chapter 22 and verse 42, he said, "What think you of Christ? Whose son is he?" The Message puts it this way: what do you think about the Christ? Whose son is he? That question was important to the disciples. And that question was also important to the Pharisees of old. And that's a question that's also vitally important to us who live today. To be sure, there is no question in the history of all the world that's so important. Because you see, the answer that a man or a woman gives to that question is going to determine where they spend eternity. And over the years, there have been a lot of answers given to that question. There are those in our world today, and there have always been those, who thought of Jesus Christ as an imposter and a charlatan. And there are others who think of Jesus Christ as merely a man, a good man to be sure, but nothing more than that, just a man. And then at the opposite end of the spectrum are those who believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. And between those two opinions, that he was a man, a good man, but just a man, or that he was the Son of God, between those two opinions are many shades of opinion concerning Jesus. Some think of Jesus as the greatest teacher of all time, but still only human. Others think of him as a great prophet, declaring the will of God, but still only human. And yet all agree that Jesus Christ has been the most influential figure in the history of the world. But there are still many questions that surround Jesus Christ. Was he really divine? Was he really the Son of God? Was he born of a virgin? What do you think about his early life? What do you think about his ministry? What do you think His purpose was in coming to the earth? What do you think of Jesus as a teacher? What do you think of Jesus as a physician? What do you think of Jesus as a comforter? What do you think about His death? Do you really believe He's still living? Do you really believe He's preparing heavenly mansions for those who follow Him? Do you believe in the church that He shed His blood to establish? All of those are important questions. Well, what's the basis upon which we can determine the answer to those questions? The only basis I know is in terms of the record of how Jesus lived. A record of the testimony of those who knew Him face to face. I would therefore like to call as many witnesses of His own generation who knew Him. People who knew Him intimately. I want to hear testimony from the lips of each and every one of them. You know, in the news of the last few weeks and months, there have been numerous high-profile jury trials that have taken place in our nation. Trials of killers and those alleged of conspiracies and many other types of crimes. Well, I want us to think about Jesus this morning. I want us to think about the trials that we've witnessed. And I want you to imagine this morning that you're on the jury. You're a juror. And you're sitting in the jury box today. And witnesses are coming forth to tell you what they think of Jesus. And sitting there listening to these witnesses as a juror, answer the question Jesus asked. What do you think about Jesus Christ? Whose son is He? Let's call His enemies to the stand. What would the enemies of Jesus say about Him this morning? Among the enemies of Jesus were the chief priests. There was a time that the chief priests sent temple officers to arrest Jesus. And the officers made a grave mistake on that occasion. They listened. They listened for a time to the things that Jesus was saying to the multitude. And those officers of the temple were so impressed, they could not bring themselves to arrest a man who spoke in the way that Jesus spoke. And so they returned to the chief priests empty-handed. And they were immediately asked, why did you not arrest Him? Why did you not bring Him? Why do you not have Jesus with you? And the only answer they gave was in John chapter 7, 45 and 46. They said, never a man spoke like this man. Never a man so spoke. Okay, well, let's call to the witness stand the bitterest enemies Jesus had. The Pharisees. To say that there was no love lost between Jesus and the Pharisees would be an understatement. There was one occasion where the Pharisees leveled a grievous, terrible charge against Jesus. They said in Luke 15 and verse 2, this man receiveth sinners, and he eateth with them. Much later, Jesus is hanging on the cross. And the Pharisees said, he saved others. Himself he cannot save. That's in Matthew 27, verse 42. But then you wonder. The charge that he received sinners and he ate with sinners. The fact he saved others but he cannot save himself. Is either one of those serious enough a charge against a man to merit his condemnation and crucifixion? There was Caiaphas, the high priest at the time of Jesus' crucifixion. He was the man who more than any other called for the crucifixion of Jesus. During the examination of Jesus by this ruler, Caiaphas, he asked the question, Tell us whether thou art the Christ, the Son of God. And Jesus answered him. He said, thou hast said, nevertheless I say unto you, henceforth you shall see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven. And that was more than Caiaphas could stand. He couldn't listen to anything else. At that point, Caiaphas, the high priest, tore his garments and said, Jesus had spoken blasphemy. You can go to Matthew 26 and read about that in Matthew 26, 63 through 65. The only serious charge Caiaphas could bring against Jesus was that Jesus had claimed to be the Son of God. And yet that's no charge at all if it proves to be true. And we believe the evidence of Christ's life, His teaching, His miracles, including His resurrection, all the things recorded here, give us every reason to believe that Christ was the one who was correct and Caiaphas was the one who was wrong. Well, our next witness would be the Roman governor, Pontius Pilate. He was stationed in Palestine during the critical time of Jesus' life. After a complete examination. Do you remember what Pilate said in Luke 23 and verse 4? Pilate said, I find no fault in this man. We could even mention the testimony of Pilate's wife. In Matthew 27 and verse 19, Pilate's wife told him, she said, have thou nothing to do with that just man? For I've suffered many things this day in a dream because of him. Or let's look at the testimony of a one-time friend who became an enemy. This is the one who knew Jesus the most intimately. And this is the one whose behavior is the most puzzling of anyone connected with Jesus. Judas Iscariot, one of the original 12 apostles. He was there for almost the entire public ministry of Jesus. And yet he went into the Garden of Gethsemane. And with a hypocritical kiss, he betrayed the Son of God. Was that the final verdict of Judas? Or was there another verdict? Judas was there. He saw Jesus arrested. He saw the semblance of a trial. He saw the condemnation to the cross. And after he saw that, Judas had an attack of conscience. He returned the 30 pieces of silver he had received for betraying the Lord. And then Judas went out into a field and he hanged himself. And yet, before he made that final act, before he took his own life, Judas Iscariot made a very significant statement. It's recorded in Matthew chapter 27 and verse 4. Judas said, I have sinned in that I have betrayed innocent blood. And then there's that Roman centurion. He was the one charged with the actual responsibility of actually crucifying the Lord. He was so impressed by the phenomena that accompanied the death of Christ on the cross that he said in Matthew 27 verse 54, truly, this was the Son of God. Even one of the thieves who was crucified with Jesus was so impressed that he said, this man has done nothing amiss. Luke 23, verse 41. We might as well call upon the devils themselves, who said, Jesus thou Son of the Most High God. Luke chapter 8, verse 28. To this point in our discussion this morning, as we've heard the testimony in every case is from one who opposed Jesus. All of our testimony has come from someone who considered themselves an enemy of Christ. Notice something. Notice their testimony. Because their testimony is to the glory of the Lord. And it is most significant. So now let's turn from the enemies of Jesus. And let's listen to the testimony of those who knew Him intimately. Let's listen to the testimony of His friends. And think about what John the Baptist had to say about Him. John, you remember, was the forerunner of Jesus. He was the one who announced the coming of the Messiah. And bear this in mind about John. John had as much to lose as far as the things of this world are concerned as anyone by proclaiming Jesus to be the true Messiah. Because the proclamation of Jesus as the Messiah meant the eclipse of John the Baptist. It meant that John's immense popularity is going to fade almost overnight. And yet John saw Jesus, and John was with two of his own disciples, and he said, "Behold, the Lamb of God that takes away the sins of the world," John 1 verse 29. And then in John chapter 3, John said, "He must increase while I must decrease." Or there was Simon Peter. In the night of the betrayal, three times Simon denied that he knew the Lord. He cursed and he swore, "I don't know the man," he said. But after the resurrection, after the appearance of the disciples, it was Peter who stood up on Pentecost and preached that great, wonderful first sermon. And in that sermon, he brought it to a close. And in Acts 2 and verse 36, he said, "This same Jesus you have crucified, God has made both Lord and Christ." In the many years after his death, it was a number of years after the death of Jesus, that the Apostle John came to write his gospel account. And John begins with these words: "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." And then he goes on to add, "And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld His glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth." That's in John chapter 1, verse 1 and verse 14. Then there was that apostle that we often refer to as Doubting Thomas. You remember Thomas wasn't there when Jesus appeared to the apostles. And they said, "Thomas, we've seen the Lord." He said, "I won't believe that He's there until I have put my hand in the, until I have put my fingers in the nail print in His hand, and I've thrust my hand into the hole in His side where the spear was." And yet, it was 1 week later Thomas was there. It was the repeat appearance of Jesus. And Jesus said, "Thomas, come here and bring, come here and put your hand, your fingers in the nail prints." And Thomas didn't do it. He looked at Him and he said, "My Lord and my God." Though not intimately associated with Jesus, hear the testimony of men from Decapolis. Jesus had come to their territory east of the Sea of Galilee. He preached there. He worked miracles there. And then He left. And you know what they said? "He has done all things well." After some years, Saul of Tarsus was changed from the greatest persecutor the church had ever known to become the great apostle to the Gentiles. So deep, so complete was the conversion of Saul of Tarsus that he said, I suffered the loss of all things, and do count them but refuse, that I may gain Jesus Christ. Philippians chapter 3 and verse 8. In writing to the young gospel preacher Timothy, Paul would say in 2 Timothy 1 and verse 12, I know whom I've believed, and I'm persuaded that he's able to keep that which I've committed to him against that day. But do you remember the testimony of God himself? The testimony of our Heavenly Father. After Jesus was baptized of John in the Jordan River, do you remember what Jesus said? And it's recorded in Matthew 3, verse 17. God said, This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. Later, on the mountain of Transfiguration, where Jesus was transfigured before three of the disciples, Peter and James and John, the voice of God again thundered out of the heavens. It's in Matthew 17, verse 5. And God said, This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. Hear ye him. We've seen what the enemies of Jesus had to say. Those who, in the final analysis, were actually able to say nothing evil against him. We've heard from those who were his intimate disciples and followers, gave their lives as martyrs to testify that Jesus had been raised from the dead. Men who were willing to sacrifice reputations, goods, and life itself rather than to abandon their conviction that Jesus was the Son of God. From the evidence, it is our conviction that the divinity of Jesus Christ is established by the facts. The testimony of his contemporaries and the influence his life had upon his own generation and subsequent generations is evidence. Jesus wasn't just a mere man. Are you listening? Salvation depends upon our believing that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. After Philip, riding along in that chariot, had preached Jesus Christ to that Ethiopian nobleman, when the Ethiopian was ready to become a Christian, his ability to do that hinged upon one consideration. That eunuch said to Philip, Here's water. What hinders me to be baptized? And Philip said, If thou believest with all thy heart, thou mayest. And he answered and said, I believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God. And it says they commanded the chariot to stand still. And they went down into the water, both Philip and the eunuch. And he baptized him. They came up out of the water. The Spirit of the Lord called away Philip. The eunuch saw him no more. And he went on his way, rejoicing. All of that's recorded for us in Acts chapter 8. Our salvation depends upon the belief that Jesus Christ is divine, that he's the Son of God. And out of that belief come additional acts of obedience that God requires in order to pardon us of our sins and save us eternally. Have you done that? If you've never done that, our prayer would be that you would today make known your faith in Jesus Christ. Obey His commandments and live with Him eternally. And maybe if you've done that and haven't lived His kind of life and need to come back to the Lord and let brothers and sisters pray with you and for you, our prayer is that you would do that also. It's His invitation as we stand and while we sing.